This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK present a live 24-hour radio show.
24 hours.
Just you don't have to forget. Just remember this Sunday, all right?
Someone more like me. There's times when this dress rehearsal seems incomplete, but you see the colors in me like no one else. And behind your dark glasses, you're something else.
And anybody who take the bottle of Johnny Walker Black, better bring it back, yeah?
My friend said all the stuff was beautiful.
There we go, that's Underneath It All by No Doubt. If you have just joined us, welcome. This is FUBAR Radio. I'm Rachel Downey. I'm joined by Faith Orr. I didn't add lovely then. I do apologise, Faith.
I mean, it's just...
I'm dead to you now. I can see it in the eyes. I was dead to her when I mentioned we had wine. this is the our live 24-hour marathon show, all in aid with the He For She campaign, thanks to UN Women UK. On the phone lines right now, however, we have Rose from Goodwich. Rose, hello.
Hello.
Oh, Rose, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing good. How are you? Are you tired yet? It's late there, huh?
Yes, it's 3 a.m. I started at 5 p.m. I'm doing all right. I've got 2 hours, and then I know I'm halfway. I kind of keep telling myself, when I get to that halfway line, I don't know, actually. I wake up, and I'll be amazing. But, Rose, it's great to have you here. And I've been reading up a lot about your music. You're inspired by Riot Girls, as well as the incredible PJ Harvey. Tell us about your music.
Well, you know, this is, like, the hardest question for musical artists, you know. But I think... I would say that my music is either dreamy mood pop or moody dream pop,
brilliant.
With edge, you know, depending on the song. But yeah, let's say dreamy mood pop.
Dreamy mood pop. And it says here you're inspired, like I said, by the Riot Girls, but less abrasive. Goodwich doesn't mince words or make excuses, crafting songs like Imagine Conversations, messages are left on Nick Cave's answering machine in the middle of the night.
Oh wow, you got that from my Facebook.
Good.
I love that.
I think that needs explanation.
Yes. Could you tell us a little bit more about that, please? And please tell me you do leave messages on Nick Cave's answering machine.
God, I wish. Yes. I wish. Well, you know, maybe one day. Life is long, right?
It's true.
No, you know, I feel like I write in a very confessional style, mm-hmm. and frequently, you know, sort of directly addressing a you, whoever that you is, you know, and the only way I know how to be in life and in music is brutally honest. So, you know, for better or for worse, yeah, you know what I mean? So it's always kind of just all out there, exactly what I'm feeling and in no uncertain terms, I think.
So how did you get involved in the music industry? Is music something, you know, have you always, say, written your music as a child? How did you get involved?
Actually, you know, I started writing songs when I was, I think, 13 or 14 years old. And actually, before I really even played an instrument, I started learning guitar so that I could write better, you know, accompanying myself. And I was really into it in high school, and that's, you know, but I wrote all these songs that I actually never played for anyone. I played in bands, but we played like classic rock covers, you know?
That's good.
So I had this, So I had these notebooks full of material that never saw the light of day. And then after high school, I actually stopped playing music for about 8 years, because I started pursuing filmmaking. And then, you know, after I'd been in L.A. for a few years, I met this girl through work, and I was hanging out with her, and her boyfriend was like, hey, we're starting a band. You should play with, you say you used to play bass, you should play with us. And I'm like, dude, I haven't played in 8 years. And he's like, it's fine. And, I mean, from that point on, it just became the central focus of my life. Yeah.
And how important is it to write your own material as a singer? How important is it?
Well, you know, I've recently gotten more into the idea that you can write for other people and other people can write for you. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I think I sing with much more conviction when it's my story, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it's from the heart, isn't it?
Right.
And it says here that you're releasing a gritty cover of Olivia Newton-John's Physical in April.
Oh, yes. I'm very excited about that.
Well, tell us more about it.
Well, I got the idea, actually. I heard the song just randomly, and I had never really listened to the words before, especially to the verses, and I'm like, man, this is a really dirty song. And it just kind of, like, for whatever reason, the mind space I was in at that time, I was just hearing this very Nine Inch Nails-y kind of, like, synth-based thing happening, and I thought, that would be so amazing to make this, like, really dirty, nasty cover of that song. Because even though, if you look at the cover for that record, it's wonderful, and it's definitely, you know, sexy and everything, but her style was so wholesome, and so I just went really nasty with it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And that comes out, did you say, in April?
It does come out in April, and I wish I could tell you the exact date, but this is so ridiculous. This is the behind the scenes, VH1 Behind the Music. I'm currently trying to get Spotify to fix my artist name.
Oh, really?
Yes. And believe it or not.
Get on Spotify.
Yeah. Right. So, believe it or not, the submission of the track cannot proceed until they've fixed my artist name.
Well, it's going to be really... We'll find out. As soon as we find out, we will put something out on our socials. But you will be releasing that in April time, I believe. Do you know, actually, for young females wanting to come through and break into the music industry, what advice would you give them?
Oh, man. Well...
Run.
I mean... I think, in a way, but no, I think that if music is in you, you know, you can't not do it. If you look at someone, I mean, you know, the greatest success story probably in music, or one of them, you know, somebody like Lady Gaga, you know, for her, I truly believe that she'd be dancing around in a meat dress, whether someone was paying her to do it or not. Mm. And I think that that's really what you have to have. Because it is very hard and you face tons of rejection or just indifference, and you really, you have to just love music so much that it doesn't matter if anyone else is paying attention. That I think that's the biggest thing. But, you know, I'd kind of like to shout out, in Los Angeles right now, there's this amazing moment happening with all these female-fronted, female-owned, female-operated sort of musical entities, these concert promoters and event organizers and even producers and bands and bloggers. And it's sort of this woman power explosion in the LA local music scene. And I would say, like, get into that community, you know, cultivate the community of women in music and, you know, draw from it, you know. I think that's the best thing you can do for yourself.
Rose, I just have to ask you, I mean, you said they're doing a cover of Olivia Newton-John, and you compared her to Nine Inch Nails. I think that's probably the first time I've ever heard that. You know,
oh gosh, I'm not comparing her at all.
No, I don't mean you, but I'm not saying you're comparing her, but what I mean is, like, you heard it and you're going to do the cover in that kind of dirty style. But is that the first time you've ever listened to music that previously you might have thought was quite kind of wholesome and thought, actually, I can turn this around, I can do something different with it?
Yeah, no, I frequently will listen to, you know, listen to other songs and think, you know, of how, like, you know, a different direction for it. I mean, I think that's the great thing about a great song, right, is that you change the arrangement a little bit and it can be this whole new thing. Although, I will say, when I approached my producer with that idea, he was extremely skeptical.
Can't imagine why.
Extremely.
No idea why.
I know. Extremely skeptical until I sent him a demo, and I think then he kind of got it and was like, and got excited about it. But there's actually, he used the same sampling machine that Trent Reznor has used on, you know, many Nine Inch Nails tracks, like Closer, and created this insane synth part with samples of like lions roaring and like celery crunching and all kinds of, and like I think lightning strikes. It's you know, it's subtle and textural, but it's really bananas. I love it.
Well, look, Rose, actually, before we do say our farewells, where did the name Good Witch come from?
Well, you know, I was looking for something that kind of conveyed the idea that, you know, conveyed some sort of duality between goodness and wickedness, you know, and definitely communicated some darkness. And you know, maybe that was a little tongue-in-cheek, a little bit, yeah, a little tongue-in-cheek, because I'm not that good. I'm really kind of a bad bitch when it comes down to it.
Good.
but believe it or not, I had trouble finding a band name that was not already taken by a Scandinavian dark metal band. So Good Witch it was.
I think that's brilliant. Do you know what? Thank you so, so much for talking to us. I was going to say this morning, but for you it'll be this evening. We are going to end our interview with yourself by playing your song. Rose from Good Witch, thank you. We are going to play all of this and more. Thank you very much, Rose.
Thank you.
Bye, Rose.
Bye-bye.
That was All of This and More by Good Witch. Now, FUBAR presenter, the wonderful Harriet Rose, who joined me at the start of this broadcast, and she did, and she was a very good helping hand. She caught up with TV presenter and all-round amazing woman, June Sarpong, MBE, prior to this show. They spoke about her book, How Women's Equality Means Equality for All, and so much more. So enjoy.
ladies and gentlemen, I'm very excited to be chatting to the one and only, one of the most recognisable faces on British television. June Sarpong is joining us on FUBAR Radio. How's it going?
I'm good, Harriet. All the better for speaking to you. How are you?
I'm really good. And I'm so excited to chat to you because the work that you've been doing in your career, and of course, obviously, I've grown up watching you on TV, but also I've been hearing all of this incredible stuff that you've been working on with women throughout your career. Obviously, you've just released your book, Diversify, 6 Degrees of Integration, which is incredible. Mm. I haven't actually managed to read it yet, but I'm literally, as soon as I get off the show, I'm going to read it because it sounds incredible. And I've been learning all about it today. But firstly, I wanted to talk a little bit about, because obviously you've got an MBE. You've been an MBE for a long time now. Tell me, does that change a person? Do you feel different? Do you wear a crown around the house? Like, how does it work?
Of course. I wear a crown, a sash, the whole works. no, not at all. Is the answer to that.
But it must have been an incredible feeling being given that that sort of accomplishment by... You work a lot with Prince Charles anyway.
Yes. It was wonderful. I mean, at the time, I was on holiday when they called me. The call came through, and I thought it was one of my friends, like, teasing me or sort of winding me up. And they were like, and at first I was kind of worried, because imagine, I was in Malaysia, and I get a call, like, this real official-sounding call, you know, it's a British, it's the Foreign Office, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what have I done? You know, was there accidentally something in my bag? Like, I'm like freaking out. And then like, no.
You were thinking sort of Bridget Jones 2 situation.
I know, right? And they're like, you've been, you're on the Queen's Honours list, Vicky. I'm like, oh, what? I'm like, who are you? Who is this?
Oh my God, that is incredible.
So I was delighted, and obviously, you know, my parents were thrilled. It was great. You know, I was very young at the time, so it was super exciting. It's great.
Well, it's very inspirational from my side as a presenter to see someone like you who's done such an incredible amount of work in presenting and for women, but also that you've done all of this. You were the co-founder of Women Inspiration Enterprise Network. Mm. You've obviously got an MBE incredibly young, and you've released this book. And in general, you work a lot to sort of, I guess, provide knowledge to people about being a woman in the industry, and also kind of working with all the different things you cover in the book in terms of basically diversifying the world, essentially, and trying to make the LGBT community, the disabled community, and sort of like change. I think it's just an important thing to highlight how much you've kind of done to change society. I think it's really exciting. Do you feel that yourself, or do you just think of it as, like, you know, your day job?
I think, you know, it's what we all do. I mean, the fact that you're where you are, Harriet, means, you know, the next woman coming through, it's going to be that much easier for her because you exist. And I think it's one of those things where we're all so used to what we consider normal and what we consider who should have what, who should be paid what, who should be in whatever position. And I think, actually, it's just such a waste of talent in not having a setup where everybody can contribute to the best of their ability. You know, who knows what talents could be hidden in somebody that society doesn't consider valuable. So, you know, in our industry, we're often, banging the drum about equal pay for women. But, you know, how often do you see a disabled person on our screens? You know, how often do you see somebody who's on the spectrum? You know, how often do you see somebody over the age of 65? You know, it's all of these things that we're just so used to. And I think the problem is sometimes when you only look at things from the lens of your own perspective and where you are in terms of exclusion, you miss the bigger picture. And I think it's about making sure that we're inclusive and we're asking for equality for everybody, because that's the only thing that's sustainable.
And I think it's so true, exactly what you say. And also, it's an honour to do this job anyway. And I think the fact that people are taking the time now, like Frances McDormand at the Oscars, when she was talking about the rider, you know, the diversity rider that all actors should put on it. Well, I'm not working on this film until I know that you're hiring a percentage of people from different races, different cultures. Mm. whether they're gay or straight or, you know, any part of the LGBTQ plus community. And I think the fact that we're all talking about it, surely it's getting to a point, a boiling point, I guess. But do you feel like it, we've been at a boiling point for a while now, or has
Yeah, 100%. You know, one of the things that I look at in the book is a lot of research and data, and all of the research shows we're nowhere near where we should be. And, you know, I completely commend what Francis was saying, and it's right. It's one of those things where you can only really do that if you're a big Hollywood star.
Yeah.
You know,
with
if you're
Oscars.
With two Oscars under your belt. You know, if you're not sort of the sort of... what do they call it? What's the name? You know, like the when your name is in lights. What's that? The tent pole or whatever they call it. If you're not that name, it's very hard to demand that individually. But what you can do is demand it as a collective. Mm-hmm. So you can get together as a group, you know, and get together and say, actually, we think X. And all of the research shows it makes more sense because you appeal to a wider audience. At the end of the day, society is diverse. You know, we're not saying, oh, let's be diverse for the sake of it. We're saying let's be diverse because these people exist. So actually, if you create products and content that include them, that's a bigger audience. It's just common sense. It's not even, it's not charity. It's not even just the right thing to do. It's a smart thing to do.
And when you started off in your career, did you imagine that you'd... Because it's quite... I don't think of myself as a very sort of book-smart person. I definitely can talk for a living, and that's what I do. Did you feel when you started out that you this was where you were going to go and you wanted to go into this sort of, like... It's quite academic and quite serious, and, you know, you go into quite detail with the percentages and actually how sort of... it's just very all very intense, the book. You know, you don't... It's not just a fly-by-night sort of conflict. You know, you've properly gone into it and kind of looked at the academic side of it. Was that quite nerve-wracking, or were you quite naturally...
Yeah, and I think, like you, I'm not an academic, which is why I partnered with academics. So I partnered with Oxford University and I partnered with the LSE. So all of the data and research, they did. Mm. And what I kept saying to them is, look, I'm not an academic, so you need to condense this in a form where I can understand it.
Yeah.
Because if I can understand it, that means anyone can understand it.
Yeah.
And the whole point, and I think actually this is back to what we're talking about in terms of the elitism. This stuff is always in the domain of a privileged few, and it's almost as if those of us that are just, you know, normal and regular... are somehow excluded from being aware of that kind of research. And what I wanted to do was to condense it and make it palatable for a mass audience. So it's really, I mean, it's not complicated at all. It's a very... it's a very informative read, but it's also an easy read.
But I think that's so important because, like, I always found at school that I'd be listening and paying attention but not really understanding because they're just teaching you in a way to pass an exam, aren't they, basically?
Yeah, they are, totally. And also, it's taught in a way for, you know, a certain sector of society.
Yeah.
And if that's not how you're raised at home, think, you've got a whole added extra layer to learn at school. If your parents aren't taking you to museums over the summer and, you know, they're not reading the classics to you for bedtime stories and all of that stuff, that's a whole added layer to learn. And so I think it's really important that we make information accessible for all.
And obviously it's International Women's Day this week and we're celebrating.
Yay!
Yeah! I'm so excited. This week seems like it's like...
An amazing year, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel like I'm like in a dream a little bit because it's obviously we're celebrating He for She Arts Week on FUBAR Radio with UN Women.
Yeah.
And it's
which
all...
We love.
Yeah, which I'm honoured to be part of it anyway. But I wanted to know, how do you feel about this day of the year? How do you feel about this sort of allocation of time where we're celebrating women? Do you think it's a positive thing, or do you think we shouldn't be doing it because we shouldn't have to do it?
Well, you know what I think is really positive, Harriet? Think about it. You know, so I was living in America up until a couple of years ago, and the whole IWD sort of furore, as it were, and all of the excitement around it and so on, was really big in the States. And it was quite controversial when it sort of started. I mean, it's been going for years, obviously.
Mm.
But it's only been in the last sort of 15 years or so where it's become so big and so mass. And so about a decade ago in America when it started happening, there were a lot of people who were up in arms, who were kind of like, why have we got a day for women? That's discrimination and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, it's so wonderful the way it's become such a global thing.
Yeah.
And it's gone from a day really to a month, because it's the whole month of March. You know, there's something going on right through to the end of the month. And what I look forward to is when this just becomes the norm, really, where we're celebrating women every day. And I think what I really think is important is that we make sure that this is also inclusive of men,
mm-hmm.
so that
yes.
men realize that female empowerment is also male empowerment, because actually when you empower women, you empower the family, you empower men, you empower children, you empower society. It's good for everybody. So
I totally agree with the man side of that as well, because I think it can be a bit scary and intimidating for anybody in any, you know, talking to someone in all different sides of all different aspects of life, different races, you know, whether you're a part of the LGBT community. And if you're not, if you're on the other side of that and you're learning and you're kind of getting to the point
and
where
you're scared of what to say, you don't want to offend,
And it's nice, because I feel like a lot of men, especially that we've had on my show recently, a lot of the male musicians, they all sort of talk about, and they've started to talk about it, you know, like freely, and saying, I'm really interested, and I'm starting to check myself, is what a lot of them are saying.
How wonderful. Isn't that wonderful? I love it. And I think it's and also we have to allow them to say what they're confused by and not sure of. You know, let's also provide a safe space for that too, because I think it's the only way we move forward as a society. Because if you look at what's happened, let's say, if you look at what's happened in the last couple of years, post-Brexit, whether you're a Remainer or a Leaver is irrelevant. I mean, I am a big Remainer, but that's not the point.
As am I.
The point is, it's fabulous, loving that. So the point is, if you look at the kind of xenophobia that was able to sort of rear its ugly head, to me, that's because what we did was, with the PC movement, we changed behavior. We made it unacceptable to say certain things, but you can't police what people think.
Yeah.
And so the minute somebody comes out and sort of stokes those flames of fear, and then also the sort of the environment is fertile enough to sort of allow those sorts of views to come to the surface, you get what we've seen in the last couple of years. And I think that's why it's so important, even around the issue of gender equality and all the stuff that we're quite rightly calling out in terms of Me Too and Time's Up, we also have to make sure that we're changing hearts and minds so that this is sustainable and that this change is long-lasting.
You're so right, because when that happened, I was so shocked about the levels of like...
Yeah. Where did this come from? Yeah.
And I was like, because I've grown up with it being like, anybody that I've had very liberal parents, and like, you know, they brought me up to sort of believe that no one was different, and that actually you need to recognise the sort of, you know, different facets of the society and like enjoy them. And that actually it was embarrassing to be have any other thought process, be any sort of be negative about any sect of society was really embarrassing. And then suddenly it wasn't. And it was like, whoa, you don't think that's really embarrassing to kind of say and do those things. But you're right, it's about reteaching people, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And also letting people voice their frustrations. That's the other thing. We don't allow people to actually say, you know what, I don't really like this. This country's changing too much for me. Hang on a minute. I mean, let's allow people to voice their frustrations. And then we can have the debate. We can say why this is actually a good thing, or what the realities are, or why somebody's lost their job. It's not because, you know, a Polish person has come over and taken your job. Actually, no, it's because, you know, we've allowed big business to ship these jobs overseas, and we've closed down factories and coal mines. And so it's like, let's have the real conversation, and let's let people be honest. That's a problem. We don't allow people to be honest. We shout them down the minute they voice their concerns, and therefore that's when you get the kind of problems we see ourselves faced with now.
And because they harbour the feelings and they don't deal with them.
Yeah.
God.
And valid feelings. It must be, you know, it's funny. I was at a panel discussion recently with Afua Hirsch. She's got the book British.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this stuff. And I was saying we have to have compassion for people who have a problem with their communities becoming unrecognizable in such a short space of time. And I use what's going on in Ghana as an example. So my parents are from Ghana. And in the last few years, there's been an influx of Chinese immigrants into the country. And they are now trading in the marketplaces and all sorts of things. And there are a lot of Ghanaians up in arms for the same reasons that people in working class communities over here are up in arms over immigration. So this is something that isn't only synonymous with Western societies. People find change difficult, and you have to guide them through that process, and you have to let them voice their concerns, and then we sort of change together, as it were.
June Sarpong for Prime Minister.
After you, Harriet.
No. Honestly, listening to you, it's so inspirational because you've got it's that knowledge of like actually seeing it from a 360 perspective rather than from one point of view to another. You're actually looking at the whole picture, and that's I think the most important thing, and also one of the main reasons why we need to have this day so that we can discuss and learn about this stuff. June, I want to know who would you say was your inspirational woman or women that in your life you feel like you've always gone to or you've thought of as a real inspiration to you?
Yeah, what a lovely question. So one of them is a friend of mine, actually, and I'm so lucky to have her as a mentor, a woman called Baroness McDonough, and she's a fabulous Labour politician who's just always been supportive of me and helped guide my career. She's a real great sounding board. You know, if I'm ever confused about anything, I can call her up and say, Margaret, what do you think about this? And she's like, well, don't do that, do this. So everybody needs a Margaret in their life. So she's one for sure. I love Eleanor Roosevelt, and I would suggest everybody research her life. She was amazing. You know, she's a woman who really came into her own and stood up for equality during a time where it wasn't fashionable.
Yeah.
She came from a very privileged background, but she still cared for those who weren't as fortunate as herself. So love Eleanor. And then Tina Turner.
Oh, yes!
Love Tina. I cannot wait for the musical, by the way.
Oh, my God. I love Tina so much.
Love Tina. I mean, love Tina. When you think about what she's overcome.
Oh, my God. It's unreal.
It's a miracle. Unreal. Her life really is unreal, isn't it? And she still looks fabulous. Can you imagine? I mean, she's still hot. I mean,
she's so hot.
Something? So hot.
She's one of my favourite artists of all time, so I'm really glad you picked
me
her.
Me too. Yeah. Love Tina.
I'm going to get off this and go and listen to Tiny Dancer immediately.
Immediately. Other than Tina, who else do you love?
Well, I would say because Tina, my dad used to listen a lot to Tina. My dad was very like pro women and just loved women loads.
Oh, cool.
And Tina Turner had a massive impact on my life in that respect because we used to listen to her together. But aside from her, I'm very into Rihanna at the moment. I think
love Rihanna.
What
in fact,
she's
I'm
doing.
Putting her on my list.
Yes.
Yeah, she just doesn't give a damn, does she? I love her.
And I just think she's doing so much for women because she gets a lot of flack a lot of the time. And I think for loads of different things, for, you know, living her life, basically. She's just turned 30 and she's achieved so much. She works with, she basically does loads of work for children in countries where they can't afford education. She does a lot of education. She does a lot of raising awareness for basically her philanthropy, which I never can say, is next level. She does so much. She got a honorary Harvard degree because
didn't she? Yeah, and she looked fabulous picking it up. That suit was major.
I know. she's just like everything because she's like, do you know what?
Yeah.
I've made my music and now I'm going to make an album that I want to make. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks.
Yeah.
Which
I love it. And experimenting with all the rapping, and I just love it. And also, I love how free she is. Like,
yeah.
It's so nice to see a liberated woman, like a woman who just does what she wants to do. And in a way, Madonna was that. You know, Madonna was that for my era.
Yeah.
You know, I loved Madonna growing up. And so, yeah, I put them in the same sort of category.
Well, I think we've got good taste in women.
We do. We certainly do. Well, it's hard not to. There's so many great women around.
That's very true. It's hard to actually pick, isn't it?
It is.
June, it's been so lovely. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Yeah, yo. Yeah, yo. More la la. Yeah, yo. Bitch better have my money. Y'all should know me well enough. Bitch better have my money. Please don't call me all my blood. Pay me what you want it. Ballin' bigger than LeBron. Bitch, give me your money. Y'all fronting on like blah blah blah. Louis 13, and it's all on me. Nigga, you just bought a shot. Kamikaze, if you think that you gon' knock me out the top. Shit, your wife in the backseat of my brand new foreign car. Don't act like you forgot. I called a shot, shot, shot. Like blah blah blah. Pay me what you want me. Don't act like you forgot. But I am my mom.
Still listening to the 24-hour radio marathon presented by FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK for the He for She Arts Week.
FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK present a live 24-hour radio show.
24 hours.
Now on the phone lines, we've got Jessica Foster-Q. Jessica, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very good. Now, Jessica, you co-host Guilty Feminist Podcast, well, the mighty Guilty Feminist Podcast. You're a comedian, you're a writer. Let's start right at the beginning so our listeners can get to know you a bit better. How did it start with you in comedy? When you were younger, who were your favourite comedians?
Oh, God, so when I was a kid, my favourite comedians were Tommy Cooper and Rick Mayall.
Rick Mayall, amazing.
I know. Exactly, basically. Lots of poo jokes.
When did it start with you thinking, I might want to do this as an actual job? Or did it take a long time to get to that point?
Quite a long time, yeah. I think, I sort of doing lots of improvised comedy, kind of as a hobby, really, with a bit of temping on the side, not sure what I wanted to do. And then some of the people I was in an improv group with, people like Sarah Pascoe and Carrie Adloyd, they started dabbling in stand-up. Some of the boys did as well, and I thought, I'll give it a go. And then it was like smack, really. It was very, very addictive.
It is very addictive. It really, really is. So from there, so being a writer and comedian goes hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. The writing has to start before the performing, really. Otherwise, you'd have nothing to say. I mean, I say that, I did lots of improv, but, you've got to be writing all the time now. It's, the hungriest profession there is, I think. I mean, I'm sure there are other very competitive professions, but if you want to be working with it as your job at any level, not even kind of TV, radio, even if you just want weekend work, reasonably well paid, live work, you can't be... Yeah, it used to be a time, I think, in the 90s and even in the noughties where there would be comedians trotting out the same 20 minutes for 15 years. And, I think some of them are still around, but they're all pretty disappointed with their lives now because they're not as inundated as they used to be. I think basically, the writing is so important.
Where is comedy at the moment? I mean, I know we've gone through phases of, maybe slapstick, you get the weird and you're wonderful, say The League of Gentlemen. Where would you say comedy is now? What is the type of comedy that people are more attracted to?
There will always be massive, huge mainstream hits like Mrs. Brown's Boys and Two Pints of Lager and Miranda and Vicar of Dibley and stuff like that. And I think some of those shows are incredible. Only now, I think there's a bit of an appetite for riskier stuff, especially because so much comedy is being consumed online. All of a sudden, that seems to have been acknowledged by commissioners. So some really bold, brilliant stuff is being made for online formats. And then when it's invariably successful, it gets moved to TV. So, it's an interesting time where things are in flux, but I think because of the breadth of the internet... there's a lot of more interesting ways for people to make it now in comedy other than just kind of doing all the panel shows, which kind of used to be the pinnacle of having made it beyond live work, and now it's so broad, there's podcasts of all sorts.
Well, let's look at podcasts. You co-host the mighty Guilty Feminist podcast. Yeah. Tell us about that. How did that come about? And there is there's a quote. I think I got it off your website, and you say, "I'm a feminist, but I detagged myself from a picture at a women's conference where we're all standing in front of a sign which said 'Empowered, not coward,' because my ankles look fat." I think that's brilliant. I can totally, resonate with
I
that.
I think that's one of the difference, I don't think that's one of mine. I think that's Deborah's, who's the main host of it. The podcast is about the insecurities of women who are trying to be good feminists in the modern day.
Yes.
Yeah, each episode of The Guilty Feminist starts with an "I'm a feminist, but," which is a slack of one-liner, basically. So you'll say, "I'm a feminist, but my favourite type of apple is called Pink Lady." It's that kind of thing.
Right.
A lot of them are a lot more brutal and honest than that. But it's called... It's Deborah Francis White's podcast, and I co-host it with her sometimes. I was a guest on there one time, and Deborah and I get on, and then we had a really good chemistry, and so now I get to co-host it all the time, which is an absolute joy. It's really fun, dynamic. I think Deborah is, the boss, and the sensible one, and the one who keeps everything on track in terms of correctness and inclusivity. And I think why it works so well when I get to work with her is because I get to be the kind of grubby, anarchic, a naughty one, you know. And so it's a joy. But yeah, I mean, I've just started my own podcast about eating called Hoovering, which I'm really proud of. And that's been great gum so far.
Hoovering. Well, tell us a little bit more about Hoovering.
For years, I wrote articles for an online magazine called Standard Issue, which is kind of an alternative to all the terrible dog shit literature that's out there for women, that's full of kind of makeup and, oh, kittens, and just pictures that are designed to make you feel shit. So it's an antidote to that, that kind of acknowledged that women are into everything. And I wrote a food column for that called Hoovering, because it was a feminist magazine. So it's an extension of that, but it's not kind of, I would write about stuff that I'd eaten there. And the podcast instead is conversations with interesting people. I've started off talking to comedians because they're who I have access to, but more and more as the series goes on, I'm talking to chefs and foodies and athletes and stuff like that. But basically, we share some food and then we have a really honest conversation about eating. It's not about food, it's about eating, because I think it's complicated and I hardly know anyone that has a seamless relationship with eating. Yeah, I mean, I've just seen the whole thing fascinating and I'm obsessed with food, so I've basically set myself up with where part of my job can be eating with interesting people and talking about food. So it's the dream.
Sounds like the absolute dream. Now, we are speaking to you obviously as part of our fundraising broadcast with UN Women UK Tea for She campaign. Who are the women that mean a lot to you, maybe even female comedians that you look up to?
Oh, I mean, all. There are so many. It's a really hard question because there are so many stunning women in comedy. But I mean, Jo Brand, Dawn French. Oh, I love them. Carolina Hearn, growing up as
amazing.
Well. I just love everything she's ever turned out. Mm. Julia Davis. I kind of hate this question because I'm going to miss people out. Kathy Burke. These are the people who I would, you know, I weep at the altar of. Jenny Eclair, I got to work with her recently for a documentary I've made for 4Extra about motherhood, and she just made me cry laughing. She's so funny. But, you know, they're like, I suppose, without reading them, they're like the elders. There are comedians working now who blow my mind, I think. Mm. There's, let's say some unsung, slightly less sung ones, shall we say, but, like, I think that Jen Brister is exquisite, exemplary. Oh God, it's too hard. I don't want to miss people out. I've been doing some tour support for Catherine Ryan. I think she's the most sophisticated stand-up. There's a comedian called Lou Sanders who's insane and beautiful and wild and creative. There's loads. There's too many to name. Basically, we need a longer interview if you're going to ask me that question.
I completely agree. Do you have any words for aspiring women comedians who want to get into comedy?
Yeah, just work really hard.
Yeah, and graft.
I mean, it's graft. It's one of the few creative professions where, to an extent, at least in terms of live work, there's some meritocracy. So the harder you work, the better you'll get, and the better you get, the better your career will be. Up to a point, but I mean, that puts you in good stead for the first 5 to 10 years.
To be honest, if you're working in this industry for 5 to 10 years, you're doing pretty well. Do you see that divide between men and women within comedy? Is there still a huge divide? Is it changing? What's your take on that?
Yeah, there's still a divide. I don't know. I think it's all depending on the level that you're working at. Where the divide is enormous still is on things like radio shows. There are absolutely loads of men in comedy, comedians who get given their own radio show and then they just get all their male mates on. There isn't one female comedian with her own, like, big radio station show. And occasionally they're allowed to be a sidekick. Hopefully that stuff's kind of changing. I mean, there's such a backlash whenever a channel decides to put one woman per episode on a panel show. That's one out of six places. We're half the population. I mean,
it's madness.
Tons of work to do. And it's improving in terms of live work, but as a rule, there are still probably half promoters, I'd say, that if they book a woman, it will be for the short middle spot, and it will be just the one. And they're some of the good guys.
Yeah, it's so true.
Do you know what? Things have got better and better and better. And if you'd asked me when I was new at comedy, I'd have said, no, I don't think it's any different for women, blah, blah, blah. And my God, 10 years doing this and you realise it's really different for women.
Yeah, exciting time to see how it is going to change and when it's going to change. I think that's all we've got time for, I'm afraid. We're going to put out there on our socials about your tour as well, The Silence of the Nans.
Oh, thank you.
So that's a brilliant title in itself. And are you enjoying the tour at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely loving it. It's my first tour and I was nervous, you know. I was under the impression that first tours are pretty horrible, because I know they can be, but I've been so lucky, I think, because of the Guilty Feminists and stuff like that. But they're tiny little venues, but they're starting to, some of them are sold out, and really happy that I'm doing it, basically. So, yeah,
it's all fantastic. Good. Fantastic. Well, thank you so, so much for talking to us.
And you, take care. Bye-bye.
I do love how I say bye. I really, really do. Very high pitched. If you have just joined us, we are a few minutes until 4 a.m. This is FUBAR Radio. I do love my voice is beginning to get deep and husky. I'm currently joined by the beautiful Faye Thorpe. I am being so nice to you, Faye.
I've been upgraded from lovely to beautiful. I'm quite enjoying this.
Thanks, darling. Thank you very, very much. We are here for our live 24-hour marathon, all to do with the He For She campaign, thanks to UN Women UK and Arts Week. Faith, there is another reason why you're here, not just helping me out, your beloved friend.
Not just because you made me.
Not because I forced you. Okay. There's another reason why you're here.
There is. Well, as we've been speaking about, I am a journalist, and that work takes me to loads of different places. Sometimes it's lovely, sometimes it's Seychelles. I know how much you hated me for that.
Really did hate.
But other times it's not quite so glamorous. And in April, I'll be going with one of my friends to Iraq, to Sinjar. And the reason we're going there is because now that Islamic State has been defeated and left the area, there are tens of thousands of people, who women and children particularly, who are trying to kind of recover both emotionally and physically from the scars. I mean, you know, I've met some of the women who escaped Islamic State and who had been held as sex slaves. I mean, Nadia Murad's sort of the, I mean, I hesitate to use the word poster child, but, you know, she's the kind of face of the campaign. And like, she was abused by two men at the same time until the point that she passed out. She fell unconscious one night, and that's just one night of the months that she was held, and thousands of women were held. But now the Islamic State has been kind of battled back, and they are still holding women, so they haven't been entirely defeated. They are still holding these women. But we do need to move to kind of like more of a kind of recovery phase. And there's two hospitals in the Sinjar area, and they are treating all of these thousands of people, but they have nothing. They don't have any medical supplies. They don't have any medicine. There's babies arriving just with simple things like dehydration, and they're dying because they can't be treated, and there's no ambulances to take them to any other places where they can be treated. So my friend Fiona, who is sort of a superwoman, she volunteers with a charity called Yazda, and she has gathered up 5 40-foot containers. So to put that in perspective, you know the massive lorries you see on the motorways?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's 5 of them full of medical supplies worth £300,000 that she is getting driven out to Iraq. And then we're going out, and when we go, for every... So we've raised all the money to send it all out, but for every £450 extra on top of that, we will take out this massive pack of medicine with us when we go. And the medicine is really important because there isn't even paracetamol there. They're having to smuggle paracetamol over the border from Syria, and that's obviously at a great cost and a great danger, because every time you cross the border, like, it's really dangerous. You know, there's still Islamic State, there's still other terror groups. Obviously the government forces there aren't particularly friendly either. So these people are really struggling, they're really fighting. And we've been like campaigning. Amal Clooney is involved in the same campaign. She spoke at the United Nations really quite passionately and made it, it was declared a genocide. And now we're beheading out there, we're going to take medicine with us. So yeah, I mean, I'm on Twitter at FaithOr if anyone wants to help us with that. We do have a sort of Facebook fundraising campaign for that, and we'll be taking as much medicine as we can.
That's fantastic. Yes, do look. And your Twitter handle again one more time, Faith?
FaithOr.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Faith. It's been amazing to have you here. We are going to listen to a very quick song. Don't go anywhere. We're back shortly.